Journey from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 24, text number 26. Pachyantam vividha pakaha. Supanta payasadayaha. Samyavapupashashkulaha. Saravadohascha griyatam. Pachyantam vividha pakaha. Supantaha payasadayaha. Samyavapupashashkulyaha. Saravadohascha griyatam. Pachyantam vividha pakaha. Supantaha payusadayaha. Samyavapupashashkulyaha. Saravadohascha griyatam. Pachyantam vividha pakaha. Supantaha payasadayaha. Samyavapupashashkulyaha. Saravadohascha griyatam. Pachyantam vividha pakaha. Supantaha payasadayaha. Samyavapupashashkulyaha. Saravadohascha griyatam. Ladies. Pachyantam vividha pakaha. Supanta payasadayaha. Samyavapupashashkulyaha. Saravadohascha griyatam. Pachyantam vividha pakaha. Supantasvasyasadayaha. Samyavapupashashkulyaha. Saravadohascha griyatam. Don't all share at once. All right. Pachyantam. Let the people cook. Vividha. Many varieties. Pakaha. Of cooked foods. Supantaha. Ending with liquid vegetable preparations. Payasadaya. Beginning with sweet rice. Samyavapupa. Fried and baked cakes. Shashkulyaha. Large round cakes. Made from rice flour. Sarava. All. Doha. What is obtained by milking the cows? Cha. and
kriyatam,
let it be taken.
Let many different kinds of food be cooked, from sweet rice to vegetable soups. Many kinds of fancy cakes, both baked and fried, should be prepared, and all the available milk products should be taken for this sacrifice. Purport. The word shupa indicates bean broth and also liquid vegetables. Thus, to celebrate the Govardhan Puja, Lord Krishna called for hot preparations such as soup, cold preparations like sweet rice, and all types of milk products. Om Ajnati Mirandasya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmaye Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Lankayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinatarinam. Well, there's a couple of interesting words here that I can see. Paka. Paka. What does paka mean? Cooked. Ripe. Sometimes also. Mature. Right? Paka. Paka means, I want a paka motor car. Right? Sometimes you have to ask for a paka motor car in India when you get a taxi. Right? So the wheels don't fall off. Or at least the wheels have got some, the tyres have got some tread on them. So paka means proper, correct, mature, or in this case cooked food. Raw food is, yeah, perfect. Raw food is considered second rate, if you like. The foods that have been cooked, prepared nicely, are being requested by Krishna. Also of interest here, the word supa, right? Soup. What we call soup. Soup. Payasa means sweet rice, right? Just like South India, they have payasam, right? Payasa means sweet rice, so beginning with sweet rice and ending with soup. Beginning with sweet rice and ending with soup. Of course, that's actually, we eat it the other way around. We begin with soup and we end with sweet rice. But actually, in order of cooking, you cook the sweet rice first, right? Because you have the sweet rice cold. Except for the Bengalis. The Bengalis like to have their sweet rice hot. Maybe that's because they've forgotten the proper order in which to cook things. But it's interesting here. Krishna is giving an instruction. Here's how to do the cooking. I want you to cook like this. Right? So cook the sweet rice first and then cook the soups last. So they're hot. You know, the sabjis, the wet sabjis and the rice, all of those things should be cooked last. So that when it comes to offer them and then to honour the prasad, the sweet rice is cool and the sabjis are hot. Not that, you know, you have the hot sweet rice and then the cold sabjis. In other words, there's a proper way to do things. Prabhupada mentions actually that a Vaishnava is thoughtful, right? A devotee is always thoughtful and they're always thinking about the activities that they're performing and whether it's the correct thing to do or not. What's a good example of a devotee who was thinking whether he was performing the right activities or not? What's an example? pretty obvious example, maybe so obvious that nobody will guess. What's the example of a devotee who wasn't sure whether he was acting properly or not?
The poor Brahmin was making food.
Well, he knew what he was doing. No, it's so obvious that maybe you won't nut it out. Who was a devotee who was questioning Krishna as to whether he was performing the right activities or not? Arjuna, yes, go to the top of the class. Arjuna was pretty obvious, right? He was questioning Krishna, you know, I'm killing my family, is this the right thing to do? Right? I'm breaking religious principles by fighting with my uncles and my cousins and my brothers and my cousin brothers and my teachers, destroying a family tradition, right? What is it? Something? Vibhat Krishna? Kulastriya? Anyway, adharma, bibhava, adharma. I am engaging in activities which are adharmic. Right? A devotee engages in activities which are supported by dharma. Even to the point of cooking. Right? Cooking. There's a dharma or a truth, if you like, or a process to cooking. So a devotee is careful about what they do. Because ultimately, what is the purpose of the Varnashram system, the purpose of ordering society, the purpose of all of these rules and regulations, is ultimately there to please Krishna. It's ultimately to bring us to the point of devotional service. And here, Krishna is very specifically giving instructions to the devotees. I want you to worship me like this. Right? You know, and we could say, oh, Krishna's just a pretty bossy kind of a guy. Pretty fussy kind of a character. He wants it like this, wants it like that. Why does he have to be so fussy? Right? Forgetting that Krishna is Suridam Sarvabhutanam. He's the well-wisher of everybody. And in instructing us in how he likes things to be done, actually that's also for our benefit. Huh? That's for our benefit. Because if we do things in the way that Krishna is going to be pleased, then we also will be satisfied, fully satisfied. When we perform activities which are not pleasing, fully pleasing to Krishna, then we're not satisfied either. That's why Krishna says, surrender to me. Sarvadhamam parityajya. Follow, abandon all of the other different types of dharma or religiosity and just surrender to me. By surrendering to me, then you'll be happy. You'll be satisfied. In other words, the sacrifice is meant to be performed for Krishna's satisfaction. Then, because we tend to think, oh, well, serving Krishna means I'll be satisfied, so therefore I should work out how I should be satisfied. Right? But actually, that's not really the correct mood. The correct mood is let me serve according to Krishna's satisfaction. Cook the sweet rice first, then do the sabjis. So the sabjis are hot. Sounds good, actually. And here, actually, with an emphasis on this word pakkaha, right? Pakka. When you think about it, pakka. Pachyantam, let the people cook. Vividha, many varieties. Pakkaha, nicely cooked. Well cooked, well prepared. Put effort into the cooking. And actually, you know, in one sense, our devotional service is like cooking also. You know, we can put full effort into our devotional service, or we can put half effort into it. Right? But then our service is not paka. Right? Service isn't mature. Devotional, the mood of devotional service or the activities of devotional service are likened to a mango. Right? The example is given of a mango. A mango is a mango. In the beginning and in the end. But, you know, nobody likes to eat a green unripened mango. What does a green unripened mango taste like? Straight off the tree. Sour. Mm. Not nice. Although there are things you can do with green sour mangoes. Right? So still a mango. Still has some utility. But the topmost mango on the top of the tree, where it's getting the full force of the sun, that's where the ripe mangoes are. And what does a ripened mango taste like? Sweet. Sweet and juicy. Right? Whereas a green mango is sour and hard, tough. Right? So our devotional service is also meant to be sweet and juicy, not sour and unpalatable. Although it is devotion, actually it is devotion, even in the immature stage it is devotional service, so it still has some potency. But our service is meant to be paka. In other words, it's meant to be for Krishna's pleasure. In the beginning we perform devotional service and we're thinking, you know, what am I going to get out of it? What's in it for me? But ultimately that kind of devotional service is not as satisfying as the service that is rendered to Krishna without consideration. This is Rupa Goswami's recommendation right at the beginning of the Nectar of Devotion of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He describes what devotional service really is. What it really is. Anya bilashita shunyam. It is without desire, actually. It is performed with a desire to please Krishna. Anukulyena Krishnanu shilanam. This is the qualities of pure devotional service. The qualities of pure devotional service is that it is done in a favorable mood for pleasing Krishna. Very interesting point. Without consideration, jnana kamanyana vittam, without being covered by personal consideration of the devotee, that's the topmost, that's actually devotional service. The other type of service is a mixed type of service, kama mishra bhakti, jnana mishra bhakti. It's mixed, and it isn't actually paka. It's not actually mature. There's some motivation involved. And so that's not actually as pleasing to, that's not as pleasing to Krishna. And ultimately, because it's not pleasing to Krishna, it is not as pleasing for the devotee. It's a very interesting mood. Paka, or mature devotional service, which is sweet and juicy and relishable for the devotees, very attractive. Actually, that it's interesting, you know, one of the six symptoms of pure devotional service, when it is very pure, when the devotee's attitude is very pure, then that attracts Krishna. That's how powerful it is. That's why we like to be in the association of pure devotees. Because it's so attractive. It's so relishable. It's so enjoyable. It is actually, it's the springboard it's the springboard into, if you like, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Right? We want to dive into the ocean of devotional service and swim in the ocean of, as Prabhupada explains in the beginning of the Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami explains, the devotees are like sharks. Right? They swim in the ocean. Whereas the Mayavadis, impersonalists, they want to become one with the ocean and lose their identity. But the devotees are not like that. The devotees are like sharks. They like to swim in the ocean and enjoy. Right? Because the devotees are not sharks, actually. Shark is, you know, like something, especially in Australia, the image of a shark is something that comes along and bites your leg off. Very unpleasant. But actually, the association of the devotees is the opposite. It's very attractive, very enjoyable. And so we want to associate with the devotees swimming in the ocean of the nectar of devotion, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. But in order to swim in that ocean, our devotional service has to be pakka. It has to be mature. It has to be without material consideration, actually. That's true devotion. Otherwise, the other type of devotion is just devotion to me. Isn't it? When you think about it, it's just devotion to myself. I'll do this for you, Krishna, if you give this to me. And so therefore, you know, the symptoms of devotional service are that the devotee presents themselves to the spiritual master and to Krishna. Well, how do you want me to do the service? Right? No, I want this, I want that, I'd like another couple of these things, and I want, you know, I want, that's alright, when you go for a job, you can do that kind of thing. Right? You don't do that either when you go for a job. No. When you go for a job, it's like, please give me a job. Whatever you give me, I'll accept. Actually, I've seen that here, actually, when the boys come from India and they're looking for a job. I say, I just got a job. They're quite happy. And I say, what's the rate of pay? And they say, I forgot to ask. I say, you didn't ask how much money they're going to pay you. You just took a job. They wouldn't do that for Krishna, would they? Just give me some service, any service. I don't care what you give me. But it's very interesting. If when the devotee's service is mature in that kind of in that mentality, then Krishna looks after the devotee. Right? You can see it in Manasa Deho Geho. That song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I was discussing it yesterday, and it's a very amazing song. Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Basically, he says to Jivane Marane, whether I live or whether I'm dead. Basically, he says it twice actually. Jivane Marane, whatever, I don't mind. Marobe Rakobe. You can kill me or you can protect me. I'm happy to be yours. The mood of a devotee, pure devotee, which is what we're supposed to be. Right? That's what we're supposed to be. The whole process of devotional service is, as I mentioned before, Vaishnava is meant to be looking, what is the right thing to do, what is the wrong thing to do. Now let me not do the wrong thing, let me do the right thing. And the whole process of devotional service, especially our process of devotional service, is taking the holy name of Krishna. Right? Taking Krishna's name seriously. Yes, I will chant. I will accept Krishna's name. And then in accepting Krishna's name, we're expected to move from the offensive stage of chanting Hare Krishna to the clearing stage. And ultimately, the clearing stage should bring us to the pure stage of bhakti. In other words, differentiating. Yes, this is the right way to act. This is not the right. This is incorrect, and putting that out. Then the devotional service becomes pakka. Right? Just like when you're cleaning the spinach, you want to get rid of, because there's you can make shak. Just get the spinach, chuck it all in, and cook it. Right? But then at the end, you've got nicely cooked spinach, but there's a whole bunch of sand in there as well. Right? And then when you eat it, it's like, oh God, it's terrible. You can't even eat it. because all of the stuff is mixed in there. The sand is, it's horrible. Spinach is cooked, but there wasn't enough attention to the details. So a devotional service has to be like that. It has to be the spinach properly rinsed and cleaned, so that when you make the preparation, then it's offerable to Krishna, right? Otherwise, if we keep the unwanted ingredients in our devotional service, actually it's not a pukka offering, right? What's the opposite of pukka? Kacha. Yeah, that's right, kacha. It's not ready. It's not ripe. Not mature. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, you know, you can kill me if you like. I don't mind. You can protect me. That I will accept also. But he says... I don't want to take birth as Brahman, right, which is the topmost position in the whole creation, right, if I'm not a devotee. I don't want to be Brahman if I'm not a devotee. But I'll be happy to be a germ or a worm in the house of your devotee, is his mood. He says, just give me the association of a devotee who's not interested in liberation, who's not interested in material acquisition. Give me the association of a pure devotee. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's prayer. That's what I want. This house, this family, this facility that you've given me, actually it's yours. In another song, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, you know, I am just a dog. I am your dog, Krishna, and I'm guarding your family. I'm happy to be guarding your family as your dog. Right? I'll be a dog outside the house of your family. Right? This is the mood of that's the mood of a householder. This is the proper mood of a householder. This is your family, Krishna, and I'm simply looking after it for you. Like a guard dog. Huh? What's a dog do? Protects the house on behalf of the owner. Because we're thinking, I am the owner of the house. But actually, no. We're not the owner of the house. Krishna is the owner of the house. And we're his dog. So if there's some threat, we should be there. Grrr, what are you doing? We're thinking, what are you doing coming near my house? But the right mentality is, grrr, what are you doing coming near Krishna's house? Right? This is the mood of a devotee. Pure devotee is thinking in that way. That it's interesting. Damodara Maharaj was discussing how we should think of everything in relationship to Krishna. So instead of thinking, "Ah, this is my house. What are you doing coming here?" we should be thinking, "This is Krishna's house. What are you doing coming here?" So we can relate. It's not difficult to relate everything to Krishna. The only thing is, unfortunately, sometimes we forget Krishna and we think, "Oh, this is mine." But actually, the devotee doesn't think that it's mine. He thinks, oh, this belongs to Krishna. Then for such a devotee, Krishna actually looks after them. I was looking... Chandrarupa wanted me to go on a tour of inspection of the new household quarters at 60 Little Page Street. Which I should have gone home and had a rest, actually. That's what I was feeling like doing. Anyway. Gopal Guru said to me, he said, Prabhu, you were right. You told me that Krishna will look after us. Who would have thought that these things would happen? Actually, it's very funny, you know, Gopal Guru was thinking, who would have thought these things were happening, would happen? Good example, if you surrender yourself to Krishna, and then, you know, at the same time flying over the Indian Ocean coming to Australia, Krishna Murari's dad was thinking, who would have thought this would happen? Who would have thought that I'd be going to Africa or going to America? But who would have thought going to Australia? All the way to Australia to celebrate the wedding of my daughter. Very funny. So Krishna is very, you know, sometimes we don't have faith in Krishna, that Krishna will look after us. But it's my experience that if we give everything to Krishna, then Krishna will look after us adequately, actually more than adequately. More than adequately. In ways that we couldn't even imagine. We can't imagine how Krishna will look after us. A devotee's always told me, just give everything to Krishna and he'll look after you. And I remember when I joined it, when I moved into the temple, then everything that I had was taken away. Everything that I considered valuable or worth any effort to attain was gone. Which is a little distressing. I don't know if you've ever had that experience. Everything taken away. Jeans, long hair, girlfriend, the works, my push bike, everything gone, with nothing. And then, you know, rummaging around in the brahmachari, you know, wash basket for clothes. One day you've got your pair of socks, the next day somebody else has got it. We used to have those inner sleeping bags, and then we would just throw all of the washing into. Actually, it was, in one sense, it was worse in a previous era of ISKCON, because in those days nobody was allowed. You know, the brahmacharis in some temples, you didn't have proprietorship over anything. It was just what came out. That's what you wore, which is a little bit impersonalist. Actually, that's a little impersonal. So everything that I considered to be near and dear to me was gone. I moved to a new city, so my parents, my friends, although most of the friends weren't worth keeping anyway, so that was. I've mentioned this before, but I remember once being, you know, I had to do the kitchen clean up and I wasn't particularly fast at doing it. And I remember it being at 1 o'clock in the morning in the kitchen in tears because I thought, what have I done? Here I am, I've got nothing. And, you know, here, and I'm stuck here doing the kitchen cleanup at midnight. I want to go to bed. Last thing I want to be is doing the kitchen cleanup at midnight. Actually, one of the devotee who was the temple commander then, he was a bit of a meanie. And he used to come to me at 6:30 at night and he'd say, have a guess what, Bhakta Andy? You're doing the kitchen cleanup tonight. Great. So anyway, I was quite distressed, but somehow or other, by Krishna's mercy, I stuck it out. Actually, I remember Bhagavata Shriya and Balaram and Korma, the devotees who were giving Bhagavatam classes for about 3 months after I joined up. I remember nearly every class I would always preach. You have to always stay in the association of the devotees. You should never leave the association of the devotees. That's what I used to hear. You have to stay in the association of the devotees. You should never leave the association of the devotees. Whereas I felt like, oh God, this is too hard. I can't cope with it anymore. And then I used to think, where will I go? There isn't anywhere to go. But then what I noticed was, over time, as I became familiar with the process of devotional service and as I became familiar with my surroundings and my service, then Krishna gave me back all of those things. All of the things that I had, except my long hair and my jeans, which I didn't need. Actually, even my jeans, I eventually got to go on Sankirtan. I was cleaning the Prasadam room floor for about 3 months But those 3 months seemed like 12 years or more. Whenever a new devotee would join, I used to think, okay, great. Now he can do the prasadam room floor. Then he'd get to do some other service. And I used to think, hang on a second. How come I'm still doing the prasadam room floor? That's not right. When I joined up, they gave me the prasadam room floor. That's what you give all the new bhaktas. Now he's a new bhakta, and I'm still doing the prasadam room floor. It's not fair. But eventually I got to do that. When you got to go on Sankirtan, and that meant you didn't have to do the prasadam room floor anymore. But I was still doing the kitchen cleanup, which was even worse. Actually, I remember Prabhu used to do the kitchen cleanup by 9 o'clock. Very quick. He was a very expert kitchen cleaner. And I used to be doing it, you know, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night. And I could never work out, how come these guys can... And he always did a better job. I said, how come these guys can clean the kitchen so quickly and do a fantastic job, and it takes me hours and I can't even do as good a job as them? Anyway, over time, all of the things that I had previously, my motor car, my push bike, my... got my girlfriend back. Girlfriend came back. House came back. All of the things that I had before I was a devotee. But the difference was, Krishna had taught me how I should use those things in his service. A very important point. Before I became a devotee, actually I thought all of these things were Maya. Girlfriend's Maya, motor car's Maya. I didn't have a driver's license. I owned a motor car for 3 years, but I didn't have a driver's license in all that time. Which is pretty stupid when you think about it. I was thinking, motor cars, driver's licenses, governments, tax, Maya. Illusion. All part of the illusory energy. In fact, actually, for all of my life, I think I've only ever put in one tax return. Ever. As a Maya. Although before that, I was just thinking, you know, unnecessary complication of life. So that way I was a bit of a hippie. But those things came back, and only as a result of the fact that I was... able to Krishna, by Krishna's mercy, by Prabhupada's mercy and by the mercy of the devotees, I was given an opportunity to use, to be a devotee actually, and to engage things, to be properly utilized in Krishna's service. I wish it were in the same mood of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but unfortunately not as. But at least we can aspire to that same mood. Whatever I have, my house, my body, my mind, all of these things belong to you. That's his mood. That's a mood. That's the pukka. That's the mature mood of a devotee. Right? And that's what we're supposed to be becoming. Mature mood means, am I doing the right thing? Is this pleasing to Krishna? Am I doing it in the way that Krishna requests? Right? Just like Krishna is here saying, here's how to cook the feast. Here's how to organize the ceremony. Here's how to worship me, basically. Right? He's saying, here's how we worship Krishna, by worshipping Govardhan Hill. So he gives a very clear description of how to do it. Here's how we worship Radha Ballabha. It's amazing how over the years devotees try to change the way that we worship the deities. I'm serious. I've seen it. Very disappointing, actually, to see it. But there is a way to worship Krishna. You know, why does Krishna give so many instructions in the Bhagavad Gita? Right? Why are there so many instructions in the Srimad Bhagavatam? So that we can know what's the right thing to do, and that's what we'll embrace. Even if it has some, even if there's some difficulty attached to it, right? And knowing what are the negative things and giving them, putting them aside, because we know that ultimately they're going to be distractions. They're obstacles in the path of devotional service. That's why Krishna gives the instructions. Do it like this. Don't do it like that. The yama and the niyama. Actually, every yoga system has these features in the beginning. Especially in bhakti. In the beginning we have do's and don'ts. In the mature stage of devotional service, then actually the do's and don'ts are not so important. Because the devotee, you know, he's so involved in serving Krishna, that just becomes the focus, the prime focus. And even actually, in serving Krishna, even they may do some of the don'ts. Right? Because the transcendental mode of service overrides any of the rules and regulations. Of course, that's a mature stage, very mature stage of devotional service. But that's what we need to aspire to or for, is that mood of mature mood, which is really, the offences, the attachments, the anattas are put aside, relinquished. And we're moving to the stage of rendering service to Krishna favourably. Now, rendering service to Krishna favourably usually means rendering service to Krishna in a way that Krishna's devotees want. The way that the spiritual master wants. So the appropriate mood of the devotee is, he comes to the spiritual master and he says, "What service do you want me to do?" That's the mood. What service do you want me to do? That's what Prabhupada mentions. That was my mood in serving Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. That was the only... Actually, that's the only question, really, that the disciple should be asking, in one sense. Not the only question, but certainly the prime... The question of prime importance is, how would you like me to render service to you? But usually, you know, oh, Guru Maharaj, I've got this problem. Can you help me solve it? Huh? I want to get married. Can I marry this one? Huh? I haven't got a job yet. What do you think I should do? Right? Somebody at work is giving me a hard time. Can you help me? There's, you know, me, help me. But actually, the mood of the devotee is, how can I serve you? That's the right question we should be asking. Krishna, how can I serve you? And, you know, the most developed form of service, actually, the most developed form of service, or the mode or the type of service that is recommended for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, the service that will most readily and easily elevate us to this point of especially this mood of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Actually, if you look at the mood of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's songs, it's interesting, you know, he says, what does he say? He says, Janaka Janani. Janaka Janani, and it's translated as father, mother. What else does he say? Guru Pati, you are my master, my father. Oh, Pati means husband, doesn't it? Pati means husband. So he says, you are everything to me. You are everything to me. So if you analyse this mood of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, actually his mood is in as a maidservant, because he says, what does he say? He says, you are everything to me, my father, my mother, my guru, my pati. And I think children, there's a couple of other things in there that he mentions in terms of family relations. He says, you are everything to me, O Lord of Radha. Right? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is singing this song in the mood of the servants of Krishna, the intimate servants of Krishna, the cowherd damsels, in other words. He's thinking of himself as a servant of Krishna's most intimate servants. That's the mood of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So the service that the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, the followers of Lord Chaitanya, are recommended, and the followers of Lord Chaitanya are recommended to follow Rupa Goswami. That's what we describe. We're Rupanugas, Rupanuga Bhaktas. The service that we are recommended to perform is the Sankirtan Jagya. This is actually Lord Chaitanya's prescription for making advancement in Krishna consciousness. But it's interesting because, you know, we think, oh, I'm supposed to be a Sankirtan devotee. Oh, that means I've got to be a book distributor, or I've got to go on Harinam, or some type of preaching. I've got to be a preacher. But actually, the interesting thing is that preaching Krishna consciousness is a multifaceted activity. And, you know, so sometimes devotees think, cleaning the prasadam hall, what do I have to do that for? And I know what it's like, because I felt like that too. It's hard work, and it's, you know, it's not what you would call intellectually stimulating. Right? Mopping the floor with a bucket and what is, you know, it's pretty mind-numbing. As are some of the other activities that we perform, cleaning and so forth. Cleaning the paraphernalia. Or even cooking offerings. Why do I have to cook this offering when I could be out preaching? Right? After all, Lord Chaitanya says, you know, this is the Sankirtan movement, and, you know, that's how we go back home, back to Godhead. So that I should be out preaching. But could you imagine if everybody left the temple and went out preaching, what would happen? Who's going to dress the deities? Who's going to cook the offerings? We like to eat the, you know, we've got, what's that? Ardva Kuka Nayaka? Is that right? Half a hen philosophy. We like to eat the prasadam that comes out of the kitchen, but we don't like to do the work that makes the prasadam come out. Huh? And we should see that all of these activities are, in effect, actually supporting the Sankirtan. Keeping the temple clean, worshipping the deities on time, making the offerings paka, right? Making sure that they're on time. All of those activities are actually preaching. And they actually enthuse and support the whole consciousness of the community of devotees. This is how important it is. It really is important that we do all of these things with great enthusiasm, with great determination, and without much personal consideration, but done in a mood of pleasing Krishna. In other words, it's a sacrifice. It is a sacrifice. But that sacrifice is immensely pleasing to Krishna. And it is part of the Sankirtan movement. It supports the whole of the preaching of Krishna consciousness in Melbourne, practically speaking. The service to the deities in this temple supports our preaching. There's those four slogans. What are they? Books are the basis. Purity is the force. Is it three slogans? Utility is the principle. What's the other one? Oh, preaching is the essence. That's right. Preaching is the essence. Actually, preaching is the essence of what we're doing when we worship the deities. And it's mentioned by Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Prabhupada mentions it. Opulent deity worship benefits everybody. You know, when we come from Mongol Arctic, especially today, look how beautiful Radha Ballabha and Gaudiya and Jagannath Balaram Subhadra look today. Look how beautiful they appear with the new set of clothes from Gopurnima. So when we come before the deities, we're inspired. Oh, look how beautiful. We're not so inspired when we're tapping our feet thinking, 1 minute past seven, 2 minutes past seven, three. What are these guys doing? 4 minutes past seven. Huh? And Prabhupada certainly wasn't impressed by that kind of thing. It's only a small thing, but little things all together can add up. Prabhupada wanted us to focus on, you know, the details. It's like, here, Krishna's giving us the details. Here's how to cook the feast. Here's how I want the feast cooked. Oh, do we have to cook the feast like that? Why don't we just, you know, we can leave out a couple of things. It's easier to do it that way. Huh? We don't have to be so strict with the deity worship. You know, it's all right. Krishna doesn't mind. You know, I'm a devotee. Krishna will accept my offering. But of course, you know, the more sacrifice, the more effort we put into actually serving Krishna the way that Krishna likes, then the better it will be for us, actually. We think, oh, I've got to give more. How much more do I have to give? As if we're going to be the losers, but actually not. The more we give Krishna, then the more he will reciprocate with us. And then the more effective our sankirtan will actually be, our preaching will be, because, you know, there's a saying, practice what you preach, isn't it? Practice what you preach. So if we actually practice what we preach, then when we go out and preach, it will have a big effect on people. Isn't it? And Krishna, even it appears, yes, we're giving everything to Krishna, but that's what Krishna wants. Actually, it's his anyway. This is the irony of it all is that actually it is Krishna's. We're thinking it's ours, but that's just illusion. That's false ego. Ahankara. Ahankara atam atachetvam. Nasrosyasi vinanksyati. When we're thinking on the false ego platform, then we're not hearing Krishna. But if we're thinking of Krishna and thinking, yes, this belongs to Krishna, then we have an opportunity to hear Krishna. Mat prasada tarishyasi. He mentioned that verse the other day. Actually, it was interesting. Damrina Maharaj was also reading that same verse when he was reading from the Bhagavad Gita. Nice set of slokas in the 18th chapter. So it's appropriate for us to meditate on these points. You know, what is the correct way of acting? What is the incorrect way of acting? Let me act in the right way. Let me do things the way that Krishna wants. That'll be the most beneficial for us, actually, even if there's some little inconvenience involved. Then the sankirtan will be enhanced. Our preaching, our own personal purification will be enhanced, and our preaching will be enhanced. And we will create an environment where the Devotees Association will be very attractive. It's already attractive because that is the general mood of the devotees, but we can improve it more. Then we can swim in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. dive bombing into the ocean of the nectar of devotional service. Instead of drowning. Floundering, right? Does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points?
On the bad people. Us. Yeah. Why not? Well, they do. As a result of their association and their instructions, then they do. And they exist in the behavior and activities of their followers. Right? What does Prabhupada say at the beginning of the Bhagavatam? He lives forever by his instructions, and the follower lives with him. Huh? Very interesting point. If we want to live with Prabhupada and be like them, right, then how do we do that? We follow their instructions. Just like Damodar Maharaj was saying the other day, you know, the devotees used to think that whoever was close to Prabhupada was an advanced devotee. And there was competition to be with Prabhupada, right? We were having a chat and I was saying to Maharaj, sometimes devotees say to me, you know, oh, you were so unlucky, you didn't meet Prabhupada. And I was saying, I don't really feel like I was unlucky, because even if I had met Prabhupada, I wouldn't have been able to take advantage of his association in any case. As I wasn't mature, I probably would have made some smart aleck comment or not be very serious. And he made a comment, he said, even if you had been, he said, how close would you have gotten to Prabhupada? Devotees didn't get close to Prabhupada. In fact, Prabhupada was sometimes jealously guarded by some. They'd keep people away. And then Maharaj made that comment in the class. He was saying, you know, if proximity to me means advancement, then the mosquito is the most advanced. Only the mosquito is coming to bite me. So Prabhupada was, you know, he knew that some of his disciples weren't the most, even those who were surrounding him. He knew that whilst they were very sincere and they wanted to serve him, at the same time he also knew that they perhaps weren't necessarily the most advanced. But rather, the most advanced devotee is the one who understands the instructions and the mood of the guru and then puts that into practice. And of course, we can know Prabhupada. We can know Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur through following Prabhupada's instructions. Also Gaur Kishore Das Babaji and the previous line of acharyas. Even though Gaur Kishore Das Babaji wasn't ostensibly an active preacher, actually he was. He was always giving instructions. And certainly his example was instruction. Right? And, you know, if you look at the devotees that exist within ISKCON today, if you look very carefully at the devotees, even they may be prominent or not so prominent, but look closely at their mood. Actually, this is an important point. I was discussing this with one of the Matajis yesterday after class. You have to look at the intent, the heart of a person. Even if a person makes mistakes, you have to look beyond the mistakes and the external to the intent or the mood of the devotee. And if the mood is dedication to chanting Hare Krishna and dedication to doing service, right, then they have to be accepted as a devotee. Haridas Thakur also mentions that in the Harinam Chintamani. The intent, the core of the heart, because you know sometimes you can see it, that a devotee may have some difficulty, but their intent is to try and serve the spiritual master and try and serve Krishna. And then you'll have others who won't be so, but they make mistakes, you know, there may be some problems. But then there are others who, you know, make a show of being a devotee, but they don't do so much service. They don't actually, you know, so you see, there's a bit of a masquerading going on. Like Prabhupada talks about show bottle, and it happens in ISKCON too. This is why, you know, this is one of the reasons why we have to be discriminating. Actually, the question she asked me was, are we in a position to be able to tell who is bad and who is good? How can we say? Because we're also bad. Right? Sincere devotee thinks, I'm also bad. But I made a point. Actually, Rupa Goswami tells us that we should discriminate. We have to be able to discriminate between good and bad, because some devotees will be a bit of a show bottle. You know what? You don't see them often these days, but in the chemists, I remember when I was a kid, you'd go to the chemist shop and there would be these, you know, fancy-looking glass. Actually, if you go down to Arnold's chemist, he's got them up on his shelf. They have these, you know, they've got long necks and a bottom, look like chemistry bottles. And then it's got pink liquid and green and yellow and blue. And so when you go in the chemist and you see those bottles, you think, oh, wow, that looks really good. But as Prabhupada says, you know, it's just a show bottle. It's just coloured water. There's no chemicals in it. Mix them together and what have you got? You've got a mixture of coloured water, that's all. No potency. So, if we look at the devotees, then we can see, despite their faults, their intent. And we see that intent is ultimately to serve Krishna. Right? That was the mood that Prabhupada taught us. That was the mood that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur taught us. That was the mood by Gaurakishore Das Babaji. Otherwise, without Prabhupada, what would we all be doing? What would we be doing? Enjoying. I don't know about you. Maybe you'd be lucky. I'd be suffering. Suffering in the world. You know, Prabhupada used to, he'd be walking on the beach in Hawaii and there'd be the devotees surfing and Prabhupada would say, what are they doing? Because Prabhupada knew they were surfing, but then the devotees would say, they're surfing, Prabhupada. And Prabhupada would say, suffering. Suffering. So, you know, how come there aren't devotees? But there are devotees, actually, when you think about it. If you want to be magnanimous, we're magnanimous. We're meant to be magnanimous. We look around. There are so many devotees, like Prabhupada, like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Why are they like that? Because we're following in their footsteps. We may not be as good as them, but we're like them. Right? So actually there are many, many more devotees now than there were before. As a result of their preaching and their example, then there are many devotees like them. Right? There's another way of looking at it. Because otherwise the tendency is amongst us to think, oh, I'm not a devotee, I can never be a devotee, we can't be devotees, nobody can be a devotee. I can't do it. No one can do it. We're all too fallen. You're not a devotee. Right? It's a bit of a juggling act, in one sense. We have to present ourselves as not a devotee and then see all of the others as devotees. And then act as if we're devotees. That's the mood. Isn't it interesting? You know, if you look at the songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says, I am not a devotee. But then if you look at all of the words that he says, you see, hang on. He says he's not a devotee, but look at the way he behaves, look at what he says, look at his heart, and we can see, yes, actually he's a devotee. So we can see it. I think we can see it very carefully within ISKCON. There are many devotees, especially if we
if we're chanting Hare Krishna, and especially if we're reading Prabhupada's books. Right? Then we will be like Prabhupada. No, you can't. You're unstoppable in that regard. Preach, yes, that's right. Prabhupada did that. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did that. He was, how many years? He was in Mayapur chanting for how many years was it?
9 years.
How many rounds a month was it? 3 lakhs of names, or yeah, 3 lakhs of names, 300,000 names. He would chant every day for 9 years. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, 9 years. That's more than, you know, that's like chanting all day, every day, for 9 years. That's a Paramahamsa. Right? But then what did he do after that 9 years? What did he do? Started his preaching, and it was powerful, incredibly powerful. He had thousands, tens of thousands of disciples. The Gaudiya Math appeared at it appeared unstoppable. But then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur became discouraged. Why did he become discouraged? Anybody know? The devotees were fighting amongst themselves. Yeah. He said they don't know how to preach. They're not intelligent enough to know how to preach. Instead they were squabbling over who was going to have which room in the mutt.
This is my room. No.
And then look what happened. He told Prabhupada, there will be a fire. There will be a fire in the mutt. And what does the forest fire symbolize according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur? What does the forest fire indicate in Krishna Leela? Anybody know what it indicates? Huh? Material existence, that is one, but in specifically mentioned by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. No. Disturbances amongst devotees, fighting amongst devotees is the forest fire, is emblematic, if you like. You know, because it stops the preaching. It stops the preaching. Interesting. But actually the preaching went on because then Prabhupada, took it up. And in one sense we don't have that kind of problem within ISKCON so much. So some, we have problems obviously. But, devotees don't squabble over. Well, no, actually they do, from time to time, now I think about it. We sort it out. The good thing about ISKCON is that generally the devotees sort things out. Prabhupada created a governing body to sort things out, and generally we sort things out. It might take us a few years to nut it out, but we do. It's a good system. So there are devotees, I suggest. There's my suggestion. We've just got to learn to see them. Could be the person that you're sitting next to in Prasadam. Huh? Could even be you. Huh? Who knows what wonderful things you could achieve in... How old are you now? 26. Just a young guy. Huh? Just imagine what wonderful things you could do in the next 25 years. What... I guess we should be thinking, Krishna, what do you want me to do? What wonderful things do you want me to do? Clean the prasadam room? Okay, fine. Fantastic. What else? How about the kitchen cleanup? Great. Ecstasy. Ecstasy. But it's interesting in my observation because you know, it's just the little things. The little things, you keep doing them, you keep doing, you keep doing, they add up over time. And then Krishna reciprocates with those devotees who do the little things, the little services. They add up over time. And then Krishna sees, yes, he's a responsible devotee. He took responsibility for seeing that the Sunday feast got distributed. He took responsibility for seeing that the temple room got cleaned. He took responsibility for getting up early and waking the deities, for example, there's another one. He took responsibility for making sure that the Sankirtan scores all added up and the right amount of money was put in the bank. These are all responsible things. And then Krishna reciprocates with those devotees. She made sure that the garlands were made. She made sure that the deities were dressed properly. Right? Krishna reciprocates with those devotees in wonderful ways. Just like Gopal Guru was saying, who would have thought this would happen? All of these, you know. Nice house in Albert Park with the furniture and the pictures and the I said to Krishna Manari, I said, you couldn't imagine that this would happen. She said, no, I didn't. So we just imagine what's around the corner. Krishna might just be setting you up. Yes, come in. Be comfortable. But then Krishna will be knocking on the door. Hare Bol Prabhu, we've got some service for you to do. Huh? We can't say, no. That can be the problem. You know, we start thinking, you know, oh, I'll do this or I'll do that. We actually have to be very attuned to what Krishna wants us to do. That's my realization. Not that I'm necessarily doing it very well, but anyway, that's my realization. We'll try. Try to surrender more to Krishna. So that we have more of a relationship with Krishna, actually. That's what it all boils down to. Okay, Kuntaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.